Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Welcome to the Brandel Chamblee podcast with Jaime Diaz. I hope everyone's well through this awful period. And if you're lucky that you're getting a chance to play some golf, maybe obviously safe golf, but it can be really gratifying at a time when we have almost no other recreational outlets. So best of luck to everyone in that regard. Brandel, let's start today. Good to see you, first of all. And secondly, yesterday you spent almost an hour with Rory McIlroy, maybe more than an hour. You and Nick Doherty of Sky Sports talking to him and reviewing last year's Players' Championship. Rory was gracious enough to kind of go through the round with you. What was your biggest takeaway?
Yeah, well, thanks. It's nice to be here and join you, Jaime. And I would just say, you know, in general, you know, his intelligence and generosity certainly came through. But beyond that, you know, in the course of the hour that he was talking with Nick and I about, you know, the final stretch of the Players, what came through really was his ability to self-correct, at least to me, that resonated with me. He was on the range. We were doing live from that Saturday night. And as we were doing live from, our camera went out to the range and there was only one person on the range, and it was Rory. And it was clear he was trying to work through some things. He'd only hit four fairways on Saturday. He didn't play particularly well after playing great on Friday. And then he came out Sunday and was a completely different person than the player that we saw on Saturday. So he sort of talked about that discovery process on the range Saturday night. And I thought that was beautiful, because, you know, I think, as I say almost every time you and I have a telecast or a podcast, I think that talent is born in stillness. It's flushed out in stillness. And that was a beautiful moment for us on Live From to see it and then to see the results of it the next day. Also, another thing that came about was early on in the week, he realized that he was coming a little bit and transitioning from backswing to downswing a little steep. And rather than spending the whole week trying to correct that, which I tend to think that, you know, if you have a teacher there and he's got a video camera, he's going to point it out to you, and I think there's going to be some effort to correct that. He didn't make any effort to correct that. He just made an effort to do what that would do, to sort of play with the results of a steeper swing in the earliest stages of his downswing, which in this case meant fades, and that he couldn't miss it to the left. So the benefit of starting sort of steep in his downswing was that he felt he couldn't miss it left. So rather than correct a fault on the fly, he decided to just go with it. And, you know, that's the reason he was able to stand up on 18T, as he said, fearlessly on Sunday and know that it wouldn't go left, swing as hard as he could. So, you know, that came through, you know, just his ability on the fly. And I really do think that him taking ownership of his game, you know, he still works, of course, with Michael Bannon, his lifelong coach, but you're not likely to see Michael Bannon out at a golf tournament. You know, Rory values the time alone for clarity, you know, on the range. He has a caddy there, Harry Diamond, who's a great player. And Rory talked about, you know, Harry's influence and the overall product that he has. But by and large, just listening to Rory work out the problems on his own, talk about working them out on his own throughout the week, and then winning. And I think that resonated most with me.
Great. Thank you. Let's move to a subject that I think you want to address. And that was sort of a back and forth between Butch Harmon and Claude Harmon in regard to your comments about teachers in general and their effectiveness, and sort of assessing the work, I guess, more specifically of Cameron McCormick and Jordan Spieth. And they had some criticism. I guess it's founded in the perspective of being a teacher, but you have a perspective, obviously, in being an analyst and a player. I wonder if you wouldn't mind sort of addressing what they said and your own take on it.
Yeah, I guess, you know, first, I do understand, or like I'd like to think I understand how hard it is to be a teacher. Even though I haven't spent a great deal of time teaching in my life, I have taught a little bit and I've taken numerous lessons and I've watched great teachers teach. So it's not a subject that I'm unfamiliar with. And I can certainly empathize with the difficulty of a teacher. But beyond that, as it relates to my job, and I said this to Butch the next day when I reached out to Butch that, you know, you could pick any analyst in any sport, and it is not only their job to talk about the players, but the coaches who impact those players. So when I'm talking about the coaching in the game, it is squarely in my lane. And even though Butch didn't say I should stay in my lane, he implied that talking about coaching was not in my lane. I like Butch, but that's my lane. That is my lane, talking about the coaching, because it definitely affects the players. And I guess my overall beef with it is in the industry is that there's no clear way to objectively judge coaches. You know, if we all knew exactly when a coach started working with a player, and if we all knew exactly how many players a coach worked with, when they started with them, when they finished with them, we could objectively judge, you know, the work of coaches. It's very hard to do that. And I work really hard to do that, not to impugn coaches, but to laud the ones that are having success, as I told Butch. And I've lauded Butch many, many times, because I think at the bare minimum, a coach's job is to do no harm. You know, I think Claude is upset with me because I had the audacity to not cede the ground of the best mind in the game to his player, Brooks Koepka. As long as Tiger Woods is in the game, nobody's going to get that spot. Okay, Tiger Woods has got the best mind in the game, maybe the best mind that's ever been in the game. So, you know, I certainly admire Koepka's talent and abilities, but I'm sorry, there's nobody stronger mentally in the game of golf than Tiger Woods. And that, I think that was on display the week I said it. It was the Masters last year. And I think there's no greater shot that demonstrates that than what transpired at the 12th hole, where Tiger Woods didn't bite at that seductive hole location over there to the right. Now that takes a great strength of mind. And that's exactly what I was talking about. So, you know, beyond that, I have tremendous respect for Butch as a teacher, and many other teachers in the game. I consider many of them my best friends, enjoy them a lot. But talking about teaching, that is my lane.
Well said. All right, Brandon, let's move on to something that's happening right now. You just used the phrase when you talk about Rory, that greatness is flushed out in stillness. And there's a hell of a lot of stillness going on right now.
And I'm just, yeah, you're right.
I'm just wondering how you feel the players either should be, or your sense of how they are employing it to their advantage, hopefully, or maybe it's something that's going to be to all their detriments in general, at least, because they are away from competition and there is some rust that's probably setting in. But, you know, there's a long history of breaks. And, you know, last night was kind of going through some of them, and we can talk about it as we go along here. But, you know, who do you think in the current crop of players will benefit from this break? As you were saying, you know, pro golfers have never had such a long break. If you were playing, and you are playing right now, you know, how are you approaching this? How should players approach this? This time off.
That's right. You know, if you've played golf, you've been good enough all along to sort of work your way into professional golf, you've never had a break like this. You've never been away from the game this long. And, you know, when you look at the landscape of professional golf, both ladies and men, there are a lot of banged up bodies and a lot of sort of banged up golf games and psyches that I think could possibly benefit from this break. You know, just on the lady side, and look, we've benefited greatly from Michelle Wee coming over and talking golf with us on Live From. And, you know, when she retires fully, you know, there's going to be a spot there for her because she's really, really impressing a lot of people. But who knows, you know, she was, you know, physically ailing. So, you know, maybe she heals up and comes back better than ever. Yanni Sin has certainly struggled, you know, for a few years, and Lydia Ko has struggled for, you know, a couple of years as well. So, you know, maybe this break away from everything will sort of give them the clarity that they need. And, you know, it's one of my favorite quotes. I don't even know who said it, but talent is born in stillness, character in torrent. And, you know, there's two sides to it, right? I mean, they've gone through the torrent, certainly over the last couple of years. But I've been there, you know, and your head can get pretty darn cluttered. And it's hard not to push the panic button. And now you're, you know, what are we, 7 weeks now? We've all been inside, or if you're lucky that your golf course is open, maybe you could sneak out and play a few holes, but you're basically just sitting at home thinking, reading, reflecting. So, you know, on the men's side, and, you know, I think Butch and Claude were like, you know, how could you say that you could fix Jordan Spieth in a couple of minutes or seconds or whatever it is I said. Nick Faldo was taking shots at me too about that. It's like, look, it's easy enough to sit, and I can pick out the differences between Jordan Spieth's golf swing now versus when he was playing his best. That's easy to do. That's very easy to do. Anybody can do that. You got a video camera, you can look at it, you can spot the differences. It's not that hard. But I would argue that the differences, so when someone asked me, what would you do to fix his golf swing? They're wanting me to pick out the differences in his golf swing now versus 2015. That misses the point. That's easy to do. Those are the results, I would say. They are not the cause. The cause, at least in my view, is a lack of clarity. Now, do I know this to absolutely be the case? No, I'm not on the range with Cameron and Jordan Spieth, but I do sit on live from and watch the exchange and the interaction between teacher and coach. This is not to impugn Cameron McCormick. Okay. I have no doubt he's a fabulous coach, but it, you know, even Butch said this, you know, he's taken four players, he said, or worked with four players who ascended to the number one spot in the world. Taking them there is, I think, missing the point. He worked with four players that ascended to number one and they all left him. Okay. So it's not impugning a coach that a player needs another voice. Or in this case, I would argue, and again, this is where I think, you know, if I were talking to Jordan, I'd say, look, there is the range, and go get on it by yourself. Okay. That's where you find clarity. How long did it take Tiger Woods to change his golf swing walking off the ninth green in 1997 at the Masters to the 10th tee? How long did that change take? How long did it take? It wouldn't have taken 2 seconds. Whatever it is, whatever stillness he had walking off the ninth green to that 10th tee, he changed his golf swing. He changed something imperceptible in his game. And he went from shooting 40 to shooting 30. And that's all it takes for greatness to flourish is stillness, quiet. And I think Jordan would find that. I do. This is my opinion. I think he would find that. But when I see the interaction between he and his coach, it looks chaotic. It looks panicked. It looks like a lot of worry. It looks like a lot of angst. That's not the place to originate. Because genius does originate, you know, it does. And he's a genius. There's no question about it. He's an athletic genius, Jordan Spieth I'm talking about. And yeah, it's, you know, coaching can be a huge asset. I'm not trying to belittle coaching. It absolutely has a place in the game. Stuart Maiden helped Bobby Jones. Stan Thurst helped Tom Watson. Jack Grout helped Jack Nicklaus. Okay. It definitely has a place in the game. But there has to be some separation between information and exploration. There has to be. Okay. Exploration is where genius originates. And all teachers, every single one of them, learn from greatness, not the other way around. Greatness doesn't learn from teaching. Okay? That we all watch great aspects in sport and learn from them. We change our thoughts and our perceptions and our philosophies based upon great achievements of athletes, and we learn from them. And I think that's what's missing in Jordan Spieth's game. Yeah, sure, I can pick out the differences in his golf swing. No problem. Absolutely. Butch, and everybody has an opinion about this. You know, Butch said, what do you think he needs to do? I was like, well, what do you think he needs to do? Butch has an opinion. I differ with it. Okay. Butch differs with my opinion. But it's easy to pick out the differences. What is the source of the differences is what I'm getting at. And I don't think that takes any longer than a couple of seconds. There's the range. go explore. Again, that's just my opinion. You know, I could be wrong. You know, I'll throw out a Dennis Miller. You know, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong. But I'd love to see that.
Given all that, is this an opportunity? Because there is this ability now to isolate and reflect and without scrutiny, without anyone, you know, judging. And isn't that the most free and liberating kind of environment?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, I think, you know, Jordan, you know, maybe he comes out of this with some clarity, you know, maybe he does. But physically, you know, I think there were some banged up players in the men's game, most notably Tiger Woods. And, you know, perhaps this allows him to heal up. You know, we saw him at Zozo play just about as good a golf as we've ever seen him play outside of the U.S. Open or the Masters or the Open, 15, 12, and 8 shot victories. But at Zozo, you know, this is a different Tiger Woods. This is an older, sort of slower Tiger Woods. And all things considered, I would argue that he was as good, all things considered, at Zozo as he was anywhere else in his entire career. And it looked to me like he was free to move. So maybe he was feeling, you know, pretty good, pretty sprightly. And he comes back from this healed up. I mean, Rory said to us yesterday that he hadn't hit a golf ball in 7 weeks. You know, imagine having, you know, months, you know, because it looks like we may be in lockdown for another 6, 7, 8 weeks. Who knows? And maybe Tiger Woods comes back and you know, has a run through these major championships where he was playing like he was at the Zozo at the end of 2019. And then Brooks Koepka was a little banged up too. So, you know, you look at some very prominent players in the ladies and the man's game and the men's game, and you think, you know, they may come back better off.
You know, it seems like the intensity of competition, even though guys don't play as much as they used to, it does take everything you got. And it seems that maybe the immediate reaction is, okay, I'm going to just refresh and, you know, sit back and let my mind heal and let my body heal and, you know, not necessarily be, you know, real proactive with a lot of practice or a lot of experimentation. And that seems to be Rory's approach. I wonder though, someone like Bryson, who's in the middle of a rebuild, a very dramatic one that could end up being revolutionary. Who knows? I think this gives him an opportunity to further cement whatever changes he's making and gain confidence with them. And he hits the board, he hits the floor running a little bit more than he would have. There's a lot of guys. I think he's a very interesting case. I think he's taken a dramatic risk. Not to say it's a bad risk, but it's a brave one. And it could backfire. Certainly history would indicate that the odds are against him. But if he does this breakthrough, I mean, he changes the game again. You know, it's a paradigm shift. If, I mean, you talk about bomb and gouge, this is super bomb and gouge. So, you know, there's just a lot of guys, though. I mean, you got Francesco, Molinari. I mean, I think Phil needs a reset. Jason Day, a guy who's banged up probably physically and probably mentally, too.
Yeah.
And on the women's side, you mentioned Lydia. I think of Arya Jutanugarn. She was someone who was number one. She's dropped to 17th, a little bit of a mystery. Mm-hmm. Lexi Thompson has had, you know, personal issues where she's actually taken time away from the game. This gives her more time. So yeah. I don't know if you had any people besides the ones you mentioned, Jordan, Tiger.
I like those. No, I like those a lot. You know, I think those are good examples. And, you know, again, you know, the thing about the professional game, you know, as, you know, for the first 150 years of the professional game, it was primarily taught by people who formerly played it at a pretty high level. And then, you know, more recently, it's being taught not by those that played at a high level, but by theorists. Now, I'm not impugning their athletic ability at all. I'm just talking about a swerve in the way the game is taught from, you know, look, I've used this analogy before. There's two ways to tame a wild horse. You can write an essay about it, or you can jump up on top of the thing and ride. And so while golfers, professional golfers, often get impugned for their inability to properly communicate what it is they do, and teachers love to impugn the idea of feel is not real, they will say, very, very common refrain amongst teaching. But you cannot play this game any other way but by feel. Mm-hmm. So while teachers love to say feel is not real, is real enough to those players. And when I sit and talk, you know, to Jack Nicklaus about what he felt in his golf swing, what he felt when he putted, what he felt, you know, what Gary Player felt when he hit bunker shots, you know, that is gold, because then you go out and you try to make that yours. Again, I can theorize all day long, and you look at Lee Trevino's golf swing. To break apart the individual elements of it and try to assign greatness to the golf swing because of the elements would be like taking an epic poem. Take Lucretius's On the Nature of Things, right? You take that poem, and then you just list all the words in that poem. You just list them. Here's all the words he used. See how great that poem is? No, sequence and order matter. Flow matters. So, you know, when you look, it's very easy to look at these golf swings and say they've got all these elements. Look how great they are. But flow matters. Sequence matters. And that's, you know, and that's where feel comes in. So there needs to be, you know, a balance between players that, and this is why I laud former players who decide to go into teaching, like Larry Rinker or Brad Faxon or Stan Utley, Brian Mogg, on down the list. I think that's very important to the game of golf, because, you know, teaching it, you know, it has, and I, you know, I, look, I don't begrudge anybody making a great living, but it's become commoditized quite a bit, where, you know, in the lists that I see beside them is how much they make. And that's great. I don't begrudge it. Good. You know, I mean, the market determines what you make, but there's an intrinsic value in the game that's being missed somewhat. And it, you know, it, there is value derived from this game of golf outside of the money you make or the money you can make, you know. And those that, you know, choose to teach for the intrinsic value of teaching, you know, Harvey Pinnock was a lot like that. I think Chuck Cook's a lot like that. I get a sense that Chuck Cook's a lot like that. Bill Moretti is another teacher who I just love. Stan Utley's like that. Faxon is like that, you know, and scores of others. There's plenty of teachers like that. You know, it's, you know, but there needs to be a balance between a practical aspect of playing this game and a theoretical aspect of playing this game. And I think players that choose to go into teaching are that ballast.
Well, it's interesting about feel. I've heard Paul Azinger say maybe the best player is the one with the best feel, because to your point earlier about Rory, the player has to self-correct in the middle of a round. So he has to understand the feels that make the thing happen. But to merge that, I think, concept perfectly, a teacher knows how to give information in a way that conveys a feel that that player can own, because feel is so personal. And I think that's where the teaching becomes the art. And I've heard Butch talk about that. I mean, all these teachers try to get to that goal. I mean, they can explain it beautifully, and it might not penetrate that particular player. So how do you find the key to that player, whether it's visual, whether it's verbal, whether it's written, whether it's on video, some way or another, the great teacher will get the concept through in a way that gives the player some kind of feel that he believes in. I did want to just say, though, that there's a history of, you know, long absences from the game, or at least, you know, relatively long, 3 months or to a year sometimes, obviously, in terms of injury. And some have been successful. Most have probably been to the detriment. But, you know, we have Hogan, of course, coming back in 1950, and that's so well known, and he made it happen and came back incredibly, I should say, from 49 to 50 after the car accident. Snead kind of took a sabbatical because he had the yips in 48, came back in 49, and he had found it, but he was lost for a while. I'm just going to run through some of these because they're obscure. Gary Player broke his neck when he was 16 years old, diving into a high jump pit, showing off. Or into a pit showing off a high jump.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he had, he was disabled basically in terms of golf for a year. He spent that time, a lot of it, he said, looking in the mirror and telling himself, I'm going to be the greatest player in the world. So wow. That's Gary, you know, that special thing. Of course, the celebrated one is Faldo and what he did with David Ledbetter back in 84, 85, 86. That was a complete rebuild. Nick now talks about that as a huge, huge risk that he would not take again in that form, because he said, I was trying to play. I was trying to compete. I was trying to make money in the middle of some dramatic swing changes, and it was driving me nuts.
That's interesting. That's an interesting take on his behalf.
Well, but he would say, I'd do it again, but I'd do it by taking time away. And, you know, I wish I'd had the financial means to do that. I didn't at that time. But ideally, you take time away. And this is what this moment in time right now affords some of these players.
Yeah.
Nelson went away to Ridgewood Country Club with a guy named George Jacobus and worked on it and, you know, got to where he kind of, to some people, invented the modern golf swing. Arnold Palmer went away after his friend Buddy Worsham was killed in a car accident, kind of gave up golf for a moment, came away with more maturity and more perspective. And I'll just end with this positive one, which we've forgotten a little bit, is Dustin Johnson in 2014 took a sabbatical for 6 months. I mean, he played during that time, but he was away from competition, and he came back and since then has been, you know, if not the best player, one of the top three or four best players every year since then. So he turned it around as well. But we have a lot of, you know, places where a time away, Sandy Lyle never came back after sort of taking time away. Sang Moon Bae, you know, went to the military in South Korea, and we really haven't heard of him since.
Yeah.
So it's a dangerous thing, but I don't know if you have any similar reflections on all that.
Well, you know, Bobby Jones retired in 30, and when the Masters, when he, you know, he and Clifford Roberts, you know, started what was then the Augusta National Invitational, he never did come back and play anything like he was playing in 1930, right? So, you know, keeping the knife sharp and keeping the intensity at the right level. I mean, there's a balance there of keeping the right amount of intensity. And it's hard to duplicate that. And it's outside of competition.
Right.
So, you know, there's rare examples of players who went away from the game and came back, you know, but, you know, people love to use Hogan, but I mean, Hogan was, and this is why I differentiate Hogan's comeback with Tiger Woods, is Hogan was struck down in the absolute prime. He said he would never play better golf than he played from 47 to 49, not even after the accident. So, you know, once his body healed up, he carried on playing the golf that he was playing. Nothing else was damaged in his body. You know, although I've read about aches and pains or whatnot, clearly he could move. Tiger Woods, on the other hand, was not sort of struck down. He just certainly didn't leave the game playing his best. His body wasn't his best. His mind wasn't his best. His life wasn't his best. You know, he came back from all that. So, but yeah, you know, again, you know, this is a time unprecedented for all of us. And, you know, it's a slow moving nightmare, really. And we're all hurting, but on the, you know, when we get the all clear and come out, you know, from those that are blessed with the athletic ability and the talent to get out there and play, it's not to say that some of them might be better off.
Yeah, there's going to be an eagerness. I do want to bring up one kind of subcategory, which is the transition from the regular tour to the PGA Tour Champions. And also coming out of the TV booth, these apply both to you. Jim Colbert said that when he was in television before he turned 50, he actually was watching players like he'd never watched them before and realized how many shots people miss. And he'd always been too hard on himself, and it gave him a perspective to be more forgiving when he played. And he became a better player just mentally. And of course, Trevino, you know, was in the booth in 88, 89. He missed the game, and he was pointing for the senior tour. It was called the senior tour at that time. And, man, he came out so focused and won right away. And that's some of the greatest golf he played relative to the physical abilities he had at that time. So I hope some of that rubs off, not rubs off, but, you know, that model pertains to you as well as you keep playing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I had planned on playing, you know, a fair bit this year.
Right.
But this, you know, combination of this break, and I have no doubt that when we do get the all clear and they start playing golf, I think we're going to be pretty darn busy all the way through to December. You know, hopefully, you know, it sounds like, you know, some tournaments are going to happen without fans. You know, and that's something I'm interested in talking to you about. So the concept of playing PGA Tour events without fans, I don't really have a hard time getting my arms around that. But the concept of playing the Ryder Cup without fans on site, what are your thoughts about that, Jaime?
Well, let's wait for that one because we're almost out of time, unfortunately. I would actually think the greater good will be served by the Ryder Cup being played, even though it's antithetical to the nature of the Ryder Cup. I think the European Tour needs the money. I think golf would love the spectacle. And I recall as a young guy watching CBS Golf Classic, no fans, two-man teams against each other, match play, really tense, really. And they were mic'd. It was a great show. Unfortunately, it got lost when somebody at CBS taped over all of the all of the archives, unfortunately. But I know I'm in the minority in that role. Let's put a pin in that. We'll talk about it next time. And loved it again, Brandel. Thank you so much. Stay well, and we'll see you next week.
You got it. Enjoyed it.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.